not standing for the Rebbe, we're standing for the Torah that's within the Rebbe.
You're standing for the Gedolei Yisrael that I was privileged to speak with and learning. That's okay. You're still davening. Let me tell you, it's not easy, but we keep a smile on.
There was a story, they say, they saw a guy running to do something, and he was wearing his talisman film. He said, how can somebody wear his talisman film and do whatever he was doing?
Yeah.
And he answered back, you see, even when he's doing that, he wears talisman film.
No, that's the story. I'll tell you what the original story is. It's with the Reb Levi Yitzchak of Bedichev. That he came out of the shtibble, and there's a guy with talis and tefillin. He's changing a tire on his mirkava, whatever they call it in English, the coach. And he says, Ribbono shel Olam, zet vifrumai akin design, even to change a tire, they're wearing talis and tefillin. Okay, first of all, let me, we had quite a day yesterday in Shia. Have you, I guess you haven't heard it yet. A world of different, with Kahana, with Kalmbach, and then on to Russian Jewry, and we're going to spend a lot of time, and we're going to spend quite a few weeks with the Shilas that he received. Anyway, today is one day before the outside of JFK, right or wrong, November 21st, 2016. It's a very sad day. I just got the news on the internet that a Jew that we owe so much to, Ben Zion Shenka, passed away. 91 years of age, and I just saw him performing on the website this past Hanukkah, and you were able to take care of it, the money with the book?
Yes.
Oh, no, one second. I didn't ask you. I asked Avi.
I didn't take care of one of the books today.
Oh, okay. Doesn't matter.
I'm not lying. Don't worry.
No. I asked Avi. I confused the beards for a second. Ben Zion Shenka, I want to dedicate the... today's not a shiur, it's history, but I want to dedicate my words in his memory. I'm very... Ich bin sehr übergerascht. When you talk about Shlomo LeKalmbach, so you right away get involved, particularly in contemporary times where we're so sensitive, you immediately get involved in the machlokes over Kalmbach. I spoke about it yesterday, I don't have to repeat anything, who he was, what he was, his acts, pro, con. I've drawn a lot of fire with my lectures on Reb Shlomo Le, pro and con. But Reb Zion Shenke, he was a kid in Teir Vadas. And the Majestad Rebbe, it's the great-grandfather, I believe, of the present Rebbe. If I'm not mistaken, three times the dynasty has turned over since he died in 47. And he ran away from Hitler to the United States, settled in Brooklyn. And a number of Torah Vadas boys hung out around him. And Ben Zion Shenka became his shadow. And the Majestad Nigunim, what we owe to Ben Zion Shenka, that he revolutionized the world of how he died. He was just nifta.
You know, it's amazing. And yesterday, I
just learned this morning.
I
minutes.
I was looking for something in the up top, Ben Zion Shenka.
Yeah,
I played with him.
It should be on the Israeli news, the first item, but what can I tell you? Trump's triumphs over everything. Okay, so I want to dedicate this. Shani became very close to the Majestad Rebbe. The Majestad Rebbe was a great Ohev Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, and he couldn't wait to come in Aliyah. And right after World War II ended, I think it was 46, he came in Aliyah. He lived here 1-2 years, he passed on, but the dynasty continues. It used to be in Tel Aviv. Everything shifted to the B'nai Brak. When I came in Aliyah almost a half century ago, there was still Siddiq Raveim in Tel Aviv. From the Rishina dynasty, you had quite a few in Tel Aviv. Today, Tel Aviv is wiped out, everyone shifted gears, but we have to recreate Tel Aviv, and I can tell you what's happening. Because Haaretz just had an article, how terrible it is that the fanciest restaurants in Tel Aviv are all becoming kosher one by one. So if Haaretz had an article like that, we're doing okay. I want to come back to what I mentioned yesterday. We ended off, there's so many weeks, so many years on Chabad, where in the history, by the way, for the newcomers here, the story of this class, I might as well repeat it. Story of this class is very simple. I'm free to teach what I want. So technically, since the Kollel began in 78, I've been teaching myself. And, you know, I know very little, but if you teach yourself, you learn a little bit more. And if you're familiar with my work, Washington, the Rev taught me this. Teach what you don't know, you'll learn something, and the students will benefit kol v'chol. So on the Sunday class, we've tackled all of Shas and Paiskim, and the results start to show in volume 3 of Rakhafet Aron, my latest volume, what we've achieved there. In the Monday class, the boys asked me to teach Hashkafa. I taught about the Rav 22 years. I dealt with contemporary problems students have asked me for 10 years. I dealt with the history of Torah in modern times for 4 years. And years ago, when I was ready to move further, I had some very bad news. My mother died, Zichrona Levracha, and Rabbi Lichtenstein took ill, and at the same time I got the news about both of them. And I have to tell you that that news made me very old. Until my mother's demise, I had to have a mother, and every morning I would visit my mother. She lived not far from here. And actually, you can see where she lived if you look out the other side of Gris. And Ani, how are you? And with my mother's demise, Ani has disappeared. In addition, Rabbaron's illness, I never knew my age. So I made up my mind for the first time ever to teach something I know. And I started the history of Torah in the United States. And that's how we reached the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And we just ended off. And last week I ended off, Rabbi Rubin was a little upset with me. I told a story about, I cited sources, the difference between a Hasidic yeshiva and a Hasidic yeshiva and a Litvish yeshiva. And Yitzchak asked, well, what does that have to do with Lubavitcher Rebbe? I was talking about Torah Tamimim of Lubavitch. So I said, I want to end off the Rebbe and leave you with a feeling where it is different from the way Rabbi Rubin and I grew up and Rabbi Zakheim grew up. It's not YU, it's a different feeling, a different mode of learning, a different dress. But I want to tell you, Yitzchak, you don't realize the chesed I did last week. I got an email from the grandson of the rabbi I spoke about, the Chabad rabbi who describes how he goes from a Litvish yeshiva to a Chassidic yeshiva. His grandson named for him, Rav Nachman Shmayahu, and he says, I heard today that you quoted in the shiur from the Sefer Zichron Otay. I was very much heartened and very appreciated. Thank you very much. So for that alone, it was a Chesed Shalemek. And I just want to go one step further, something I threw out yesterday. I threw out these ideas. I'm told that tens of thousands of people are listening to my Shirim Yonatan, and I know that most of them are listening and laughing at all my ideas. I get nowhere, so I want to throw out the idea again. And here's the article. My wife showed it to me, and actually my Talmud, Steve Gross, sent it to me. Yeshiva University names Ari Berman president. This is an article from the New York Times, not a small matter, a new president. And I'm overwhelmed. The first president I found out a few years ago, it's my cousin, Rabbi Revel. I'm wearing the Kalbariski. My whole doctorate is a farce. I have to give it back and submit this my second book, the Suvir. I'll get a doctorate on that. Okay. So now, the fifth president happens to be my student, so I'm really tied together with 1 to 5. So here it says he takes over an institution, the New York Times, Joseph Berger. Joseph Berger, by the way, is an RJJ graduate. He's not from, he lost it, but he has a sister who's totally from. He was, a home that survived the Holocaust, traditional, but not really from. He went to RJJ. If I'm not mistaken, you can check me out. He takes over an institution from to Berman that has been struggling to regain its financial footing by also being buffeted by shifts in orthodoxy, with some liberal voices demanding a greater role for women in ritual, and others from the ultra-orthodox and Hasidic worlds arguing that the university is overly immersed in secular ambitions at the expense of Torah study. So, and the article is a very nice article, it goes on. And I want to make a suggestion for why you will solve the problems with the right wing, the left wing, why you have to continue in the spirit that it was founded, organized. I don't have to tell you all the presidents, Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Lamb, Richard Joel, and now Rabbi Berman. But I want to throw out an idea for YU. Chabad has a problem. Chabad encourages its finest students to become shluchim. There are now over 4,000 shluchim in the world. There's soon going to be a shluchim conference. If they ever get there, El Al is creating a few problems for the Jewish people. I need not elaborate. It is, we commit suicide on our own. Bifnei Am V'Yeda, Chilul Hashem, Ein Lanu Chilul Hashem Yoteh Gadol Mizeh. We have a concept in Choshem Mishpat, what we call in modern Hebrew, Borurut Chova. You don't make innocent people suffer. And Israel, we should have Borurut Chova. There's a way to do it, and we don't have it. Okay. Shluchim are worried how they're going to get to New York. That's what I'm talking about. So, what are you going to do with all these people being raised in Chabad? We don't have shluchut for you. We don't have a shlichut. We're overstacked. So I say, some of them have to become medical doctors, lawyers, dentists, accountants, you name it. Why you should open up a division of Yeshiva College, not just with literature learning, but with something like Torah Tamimim, Tomchei Tamimim, something like the Chabad Yeshivat. And a guy like Natan Cohn should encourage his friends from Chabad, come to YU, have Tanya, have Likutei Torah, in addition to Shas and Poskim and all that goes with turning into a Talmud Chacham, have a Hasidic overtone. It's in the yeshiva. Rakefet is gone. Rakefet's Rebbeim are gone. We're the old Litvakin. We're the dinosaurs. Can you picture me speaking like this, Dov, in front of Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich, in front of Rabbi Noach Bornstein? I'd be executed Dalit Mitot Beitin, like Rabbi, on the spot. But I'm speaking a Talmud of the Rav. The Mashpia, Rabbi Moshe Weinberg, it's my student. I just met Rabbi Moshe Tzvi Weinberg. He's the Mashkiach. There's a Mashpia. You know I'm talking about a Hasidic world. It's Mashpia, Mashkiach. It's a different world today. Open up. In addition to all the other divisions of Yeshiva College, the Beit Medrash program, the Yeshiva program, the other programs, we have a Hasidic program. And I want to tell you, it would be great for Chabad, and even greater for YU, and on a very practical level, it could help in fundraising. You can show the world what you've accomplished. Now, shifting gears and moving ahead, going back in time, I want to make very clear, this is a new post on the book that just came out on the Rav and Rebbe by Chaim Dalfin. And on that book, I wind up in the middle of all any controversy will engender, because not only did I write the preface, but the author put me on the cover. If you looked at the cover, it's Rav and Rebbe with the two pictures by Rabbi Chaim Dalfin, preface by Rabbi Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf. Now, somehow in one of the footnotes, there's a whole discussion of Reb Chaim Hella. And here, again, the discussion continues. I am quoted and misquoted. And I just want to make clear once again, when you'll see the volume, you'll see the footnote, you'll understand why I'm about to say is so important. Natan, do me a favor, turn off the... I put heat on because the room was cold, but let it not get too hot or people will fall asleep. And ich bin abgehitzt. The more I speak, the more I float into the air. My dear students, let me make clear to you. The Rav came to Berlin. 1926. You should know that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, the first one to write a biography in the Rav, it appeared in the early 60s in the B'nai B'rith series of great Jewish thinkers. Rabarin made a mistake and wrote 1929. 1925 came to Berlin. I copied Rabarin when I did a piece for the Encyclopedia Judaica. There was a fellow named, I copied Rabarin, and I wrote in the original Judaica in 1969 when it came out, the people who brought me in Aliyah, so I wrote that the Rav went to Berlin in 25. If I understand correctly, and anyone can correct me, my student Mark Shapiro got hold of the records from Berlin. He passed them on to, there was a person named Lerman, Marcus Lerman. He was a wealthy businessman, he was in the stamp business, and he dabbled in, he considered, he had a doctorate and dabbled. Lehman, thank you, Lehman, L-E-H-M-A-N, right, Marcus, right, first name, and he dabbled in scholarship, and he put out the documents he got from Berlin and ripped the heck out of Rakefet. The Rav came to Berlin in 26, not 25, so I went to Aaron, I said, Aaron, how did you say 25? I said, did you ever guess the Rav? He said, no, but it was in the year. We all thought 25. Anyway, to be exact, he came in 26, and Lehman is correct. It was 26, not 25. The Rav himself spoke about the seven good years in Berlin, quoting, paraphrasing the Chumash on Yosef HaTzadik, the seven good years of Egypt, the seven good years in Berlin. 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. So it works out more or less seven good years. Now, when the Rav came to Berlin, Jonathan, he's coming from a dorf, you follow? He's coming from the old little world that he was raised in with his father and mother, and he comes to Berlin. It's like we mentioned yesterday, it's like a Beit Yaakov girl suddenly going to Timbuktu. You understand? Berlin. So, and by the way, Tova, what I'm telling you now is not just my theory. This is Tova, Dr. Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein said to me, you're absolutely right. And she used the word, when he came to Berlin, he was so close to his father. And now he's in Berlin, his father's in Warsaw. It's not like today that I get phone calls and I say, where are you calling from? It sounds like they're next door. They're in Teaneck, New Jersey. They're in London, at base. It's a different world today. The Rav never knew whether, I'm quoting Rebbe now, the Rav said when he left to go to Berlin, he never knew if he would see his father again, quote, end quote. The quote appears in the Rav, you can see where it's from. And comes to Berlin, and he's lonely. And he goes into Reb Chaim Heller, who had also come to Berlin, and was running some sort of little school there, Beit Medrash Elyon, that never really succeeded, because as people told me who studied there, you had to be a Reb Chaim Heller to understand Reb Chaim Heller. You know, you're dealing with Reb Chaim Heller, who knew Kol HaTorah Kula, in addition to every Semitic language, and the man's knowledge was phenomenal. So the Rav found in Reb Chaim Heller a father figure, a father substitute. It's not that he was his Rebbe in the sense that Reb Moshe, the Rav only always would say, the Welt macht das Tors, the world is making a mistake. They think I had more than one Rebbe. The only Rebbe I ever had was my father. And I spoke about this in the early 80s. I gave a whole shiur from the Rav, what it means a Rebbe Mufak. It's not for now. For me to repeat it now would take another few weeks. Unbelievable shiur. His father was his Rebbe Mufak. But in Berlin, he was lonely, and in Reb Chaim Heller, he found the substitute image, the prototype of his father. And the Rav had unbelievable derech eretz for Reb Chaim Heller. Now, Reb Chaim Heller later comes to America, the late 30s, and the Rav did something. When you talk about chesed, you all of you know the Rav was an unbelievable Baal Chesed. Here, Reb Chaim Heller comes to America, and what is he going to do for Parnassa? You understand? What is he going to do for Parnassa? The Rav raised the money to subvent and give him a salary. But out of covet for Reb Chaim Heller, Rav worked out with Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, where the Rav was a faculty member, And he worked out with the graduate school. Reb Chaim Heller would give a number of lectures during the summer when the rabbis could attend. They were had time off from their congregations. If they were studying for degrees elsewhere, it's the summer, they're free. And on the basis of those lectures, he was given a salary which the Reb single-handedly raised. So you should be aware of this. When Reb Chaim Heller died, the Rav gave an unbelievable hesped on Pleitat Sofreim, it's called, the original Shmuel HaKotn B'Doreinu. On this issue, you all know I differed with Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. I try not to differ with Reb Aaron. He was bigger than Yitzchak, bigger than all of us put together, right or wrong. What would you say? He knew. You remember Reb Aaron sitting there against the window or facing Amsterdam Avenue, and when the Rav would get frustrated with us dummies, no, Aaron, zug me, and I would shoot the Gemara the Rav wanted, and he was never, unbelievable. Reb Aaron was Reb Aaron. But he considers the Rav's hesped on the Briska Rav the ultimate homiletic achievement, philosophic homiletic achievement of the Rav. I differ. I think his hesped on Reb Chaim Heller is the ultimate achievement. And there's a difference between the two hespedim, because the one in the Briska Rav is brisk. And it's true that no one ever equaled that analysis of Brisk. Even Rabbi Yeruchim Gerulik hugged me, kissed me. He was so excited. He said, no one has ever equaled this and that, but it was only Brisk. Reb Chaim Heller's hesped is the heart of Yiddishkeit. It's the totality. Pleitat Sofreihem. Now, what comes out in the book, in Dalfin's book, and here in the review, I told the following story. I mean, told. I saw it with my own eyes. And they don't understand what I was saying, evidently. When Rabbi Heller lectured at the Bernard Rebel Graduate School, did you ever hear of Chaim Heller lecture? Have you ever heard, did you ever hear Rabbi Yoyalish, the Sachmuruv, speaking at Shalosh Shudas in Williamsburg? You think you could understand him? And then the middle he would start crying. It was impossible. Reb Chaim Heller spoke very quickly. Kol HaTorah Kula was munachat lefonav. So what would happen is, and this was prearranged, it's not that it happened spontaneously, the Rav would be speaking next to Reb Chaim Heller. And at the end of a point, let's say 10 minutes, when he felt the point, the Rav would stop him. Reb Chaim Heller was sitting. The Rav would stand up. And the Rav would now, what Reb Chaim Heller said in 10 minutes, took the Rav a half hour to explain in simple Yiddish. You follow? That's what the interrupting Reb Chaim was not something done because the student... It was prearranged because they knew this was the only way the students could comprehend. Now, how do I know all this? How do I know all this? Very simple. I read about it in Washington. Very simple. My chaver in high school was a kid named Yisrael Perlmutter, Izzy Perlmutter. Anyone recognize the name? He lives Pisgat Zev Mizrach, Izzy. So live and be well. Izzy was Reb Chaim Heller's grandson. His mother was married to Perlmutter. Reb Chaim had three daughters. Two got married, one did not, if I recall correctly. Perlmutter and Singer were the sons-in-law, Rabbi Singer of Manhattan Beach, and Perlmutter was a businessman. No, I was learning in the Beis Medrash. We were matmidim already in high school. I will admit that I didn't waste a minute. I was learning all the time. And Izzy was with me. We were learning. And then, like, we had a bite of lunch. And we were playing ball on Amsterdam Avenue in front of the yeshiva. It was a different world then. There weren't so many cars. The neighborhood was safe. It's the early 50s. We're playing ball. And along comes Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I knew who he was already. It was a small yeshiva, high school, college, postgraduate. It was all one yeshiva. And here's Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I'm trembling. And he says to Izzy, Yisrael, kum mit mir, ayezei de wild eich zen. And we walked across the street. There was that building built after World War II with government money, of course, for the veterans that came. It doesn't exist anymore. It was long since knocked down. That was Bernard Rebel Graduate School. And there was Reb Chaim, there was Izzy, and then we stayed and we watched and we saw and we observed, and that's exactly what happened. So I want to set the record straight. That's why it's not that the Rav interrupted Reb Chaim. It was a duet. Reb Chaim would speak and throw out endless knowledge, and then the Rav would try to bring it down to a discernible level to the guys like, not much different than us. I couldn't sit in. I was too young. I mean, why did I understand? But American guys like us to come with reliance. That is the story. Okay, now I want to go further and I want to tell you what I want to speak about. This is something I touched upon a number of years ago, 3-4 years ago. And this topic that I touched upon came up again now. I'll tell you the whole story. And I want to set the record straight, and I want to give you the absolute facts, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm totally correct, which very rarely happens when you're trying to recreate, trying to guess what happened 80 years ago, 75 years ago. In this case, I'm not guessing. I can prove that I'm correct, as you will see. I also want to say, on a personal level, I've never asked for credit for what I didn't do. We spoke about that yesterday. Kinet va'kavod va'taifa, with the covered business. A lot of people get credit for things they did, they didn't do, half-heartedly did. Then they see it succeeded, they demand all the credit. I only want credit for what I did. And I have to tell you, I was offended. It's unbelievable. They quote my work on the Rav and call me the editor. So I want to make clear to you, I am the author. And no one understands, no one reads the introduction. First of all, there's a biography of the Rav, the first half of the first volume. That biography, no one gave me a gift. That's a biography I worked on with blood, sweat, and tears, and reworked many parts of it in footnotes because I wanted to tell the truth, but I didn't want to offend anyone in the greater family or Talmidim of the Rav. So that biography stands by itself until today. So many years later, no one has written a biography of the Rav outside of what you have in the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. I venture a guess that there will not be a biography written for another 100 years, because only 100 years from now can you do a critical scientific biography of the Rav. I certainly can't do it because I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I have a prejudice. Nevertheless, it is a scientific piece of work, a monograph biography. What comes afterwards, the insights of the next volume and a half, that didn't exist. That represents, for Rakefet, over 100,000 hours of study all my life. And I write the introduction. I had a miracle, Hashgacha Pratit, when I'm writing up Shirim of the Rav, either in person, hearing him, or for so many decades, the tapes that were fed to me clandestinely, illegally, the tapes that saved my life. So when, I don't know why, it's only a gutzach. Whenever the Rav told the story, revealed his feelings, his emotions, I wrote it not in blue. I shifted to a green pen or a red pen. Decades later, when I'm working on the Rav, I could go back to the tens of thousands of pages of notes and I looked. And I would see green, I would see red, I would go further, I would go back with the tapes. Now, that's all Yesh Mayayin that I created. It's not that these articles were there and it was all I took from here and took from there and put it together. That's an editor. By the way, in working on the Rav, the work was so overwhelming that I did have an editor, Joey Epstein, should live and be well, my dear Talmud, who lives in Hanof today. Joey worked with me hand in hand. And I would give him, I said, go through the tape. It looks to me halfway in, you're going to find the Rav telling a story. You're going to find the Rav talking about his life. You're going to find the Rav talking about Agudat Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael. get to it and give it back to me. At times I would tell Joey, let your mother do the first draft. She knows Yiddish. His mother, who's alive but not well, she was a brilliant lady, got a master, came in Aliyah, got a master's at Hebrew U. She was in her 40s at the time. Kala Kavodla. Let her write the first draft of Yiddish from in Tinglish. Then I would work, then I would listen to the Yiddish and see when, then I would correct what she wrote. Oh, the work that went into it was overwhelming. So please, if you cite the Rav, cite Rakefet as author, not editor. If you want to cite all three, Rakefet author, Joey Epstein editor, Roy Albert Zecher Tzadik Livracha, photography editor. Okay? And that, Dov, that too is an achievement. Tover asked me, how did you get the pictures from Roy? He wouldn't release them. You know that. These pictures, unbelievable. But you know what I pulled them in, Charlie? I'm not pulling your leg. This is exactly. I said, did you know Rabbi Albert? Rabbi Sunnyside, Kuyan Melech Amensh, a wonderful person. It hurts me that he's gone so many years already. So I said to Roy, I hate to tell you this, I said to Roy, look, you have these magnificent pictures, but Roy, how old are we? I'm over 50, you're over 60. We're going to rot in the dust. What's going to be with us? What's going to be with your pictures? I said, you give me your pictures, and I'm going to do something for you that no one else did. What do? They take a picture, and in little print they write, courtesy of Rabbi Erwin Albert, I'm going to make you photography editor. And the title page is going to read, The Rav, the World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Under that, the author, Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf. The editor, Joey Epstein. Photography editor, Roy Albert. And boy, he got it. Baruch Hashem. Now, what happened a few months ago, a few weeks ago, is as follows. When Rabbi Revel died, Rabbi Revel built the yeshiva, dreamt of the yeshiva. He was the first president. He was the visionary. We spoke about this in detail. He gave us MTA, Charlie, where you graduated, I graduated, Yeshiva College. He reorganized streets, the graduate school. All Rabbi Revel had a lot of aggravation. The money, nothing has changed. Erwin Shapiro had a long conversation with him last night, member of the Board of Trustees, my dear friend. And Erwin said to me, even with getting rid of Einstein College, yeshiva's deficit is $25 million a year. So if there's anyone listening who wants to put up 25 mil a year, it would solve all the problems of yeshiva, and Ari Berman could limit himself to spiritual leadership. That's with Einstein gone. Now, these problems haunted us. Revel had to live through the Depression. He had $3 million in commitments. It wasn't worth the paper was written on. People who had money, I don't have to tell you, were selling apples on the street, polishing shoes. You all know people jumping off the George Washington Bridge. God have mercy, what the Depression did. My parents, both of my parents, suffered all their lives from the Depression. My father had to leave college, go to work for the post office, would never leave. People offered him chances to make a living. No, the post office, at least I get a check every month. It's the American government I work for. My mother would put money in not one bank, but 10 banks, because she always remembered when she was limited, I think, to taking out $10 when they ran on the bank. Someone can check out the history. So she always wanted to be prepared to get $10 from every different bank. So the Depression and then Hitler and pleas to save Jews and Revel died pretty suddenly. Not entirely. He was ill, but went out like a light in the middle of a Choshen Mishpacher he was given in the yeshiva. And with a few weeks, I think it was 2-3 weeks, he was dead December 2nd, 1940. My birth date, by the way. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik was in good health. And I'm telling you what Shulamit Meisselman claims in her memoir. I'm not making it up. Whether it's true or not, we'll never know. Rav Moshe was in good health. Am I right or wrong, Yitzchak? Good health. Read the memoir. And when Rabbi Revel died, people started whispering the person who should succeed him is Rabbi Dr. Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Mori Rebbe. Immediately, opposition built up to the Rebbe. We spoke about this. I don't want to repeat my shiur of years ago with all the sources. Opposition built up. He was involved with the Agudas Rabbanim. He was involved in Kashrut. He was involved in Hechshedim. It's like the people today who have that attitude, if a Rav is dressed in black and has a long beard, he's from the Mordei Ha'ar, from the Balei Choshech. We have to change. We have to innovate. That's the way youth is. So there was tremendous opposition to the Rav from within the yeshiva, from students. There was an editorial in the commentator. The commentator, no one has a copy of that commentator outside of one person in this room. They took the commentator down to the Harlem River and fed the fish with the commentator. So there is one person who has it, and what can I tell you? I know him, and he has it on the lock and key, and he's not going to make it available because it's terrible. And the person who wrote the article told me, you should know, Rabbi Rakefet, that that was the biggest mistake of my life. But there was opposition to the Rav, and Rav Moshe, his daughter claims, had the heart attack and died suddenly because he was so upset that his son that he raised, and he's seichet to have a son, a gon adir with the mind of the of like Reb Chaim, like his father, and a PhD in philosophy from the U of Berlin, and he would be ideal yeshiva and yeshiva college at that time, and here there is opposition. Shulamit Meisselman claims that that ended her father's life, okay? Now, a tremendous battle went on just for the Rav to succeed Reb Moshe as Rosh Yeshiva. Ultimately, if you've read the Rav and if you watch the historic documentary I was privileged to bring into the world, you know the facts there, that they came up with a contract for 1 year. At the end of the year, they'll sit with the Rav and see if it's worthwhile to renew the contract. It was really a slap in the Rav's face, and nevertheless, the Rav accepted, and what can I tell you, the rest is history. No one ever sat with the Rav a year later. The Rav became Yeshiva University. And until today, everyone identifies YU with the Rav, with his heritage, with its teaching, with its learning, with its outlook, with its Weltanschauung. Okay, and no one is going to disagree about this. Even when Chovevei Torah began, and that whole movement, Deida, so their first conference in Israel, they had a picture of the Rav with the whole schedule in Jerusalem Post, Tova. They had it. They never did it again because the Liechtensteins were furious. That's not our father. But even when they began, they had to hang their hat on the peg of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Now, the Rav becomes Rosh Yeshiva, but the question of the presidency remains open. As you all know, I've said it many times, I write about it as well, I quote the Rav, there were three big, well-known Rabbanim in New York City. This was during an era when the rabbis were the kings. It's not like today when the Rosh Yeshiva are the kings. Man Malchei Rabbanan, the Gemara. Who are the kings? Who is royalty? The rabbis. Nowadays it's the Rosh Yeshiva. As the Rav said, when you were growing up, he said to Beryl Rosenzweig, who were your heroes? The big three rabbis. Who are your son's heroes? The Rosh Yeshiva. And this is a sea change. I consider it a beautiful change. We value learning of Torah. There are problems that go with it, because the Rosh Yeshiva doesn't have to deal with the turmoil of life. At times he's more secluded and doesn't really comprehend what's going on. A rabbi is caught out with the turmoil of life, but of course he doesn't have the learning. What I spoke about yesterday, to paskin certain shilas, you have to be bucky and call that Torah kula. These three rabbis, of course, were Herbert S. Goldstein, Joe Lookstein, Little Joe, as we called him affectionately, and of course, Leo Young. Herbert S. Goldstein was on the west side of New York. Lichtenstein was Kilat Jeshurun, and Young, of course, was on the west side as well. The Jewish center between Goldstein to Young was about, one was on 76th Street, that was Goldstein. Young was further up on 86th Street. Did I say 76th? I think it might have been 79th, the Jewish center. I may be just thinking of Riverside Memorial Chapel. I think that one was 79th, one 76th. All right, you can correct me, it doesn't matter. Not important.
Jewish center was on 86th.
86th. So, and that I said, Jewish center is 86th, that's for sure. But Jewish, the West Side Institutional is 79th, 78th, 77th, that area. It wasn't far from Riverside Chapel. All right. These three Rabbanim, they were very different, very different. Rabbi Goldstein was looked upon as the chassid. He was the so-called most pious of the Rabbanim. He was a graduate of the seminary, and he was a wonderful Jew. Graduate of the seminary, 100% from pious, right down the line. Rabbi Lichtenstein was more the chacham. He already was integrated, built ramaz. I'm using the words chassid, chacham, lamdan. Those, if you're familiar, it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's three talmidim. They used to say that he had three great talmidim. The lamdan was Rabbi Yitzhak Plaza. The chassid was Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam. And the chacham was Rabbi Simcha Zissel Ziv, Rabbi Simcha Zissel Breuda. That's the way they describe. Doesn't mean that they were not all lamdanim, but the feature that most characterized them. So I'm using a play on words. Rabbi Goldstein, I knew all three very, very well. All three were my teachers. So he was the chassid. Rabbi Lichtenstein already was the chacham. Oh, what he could accomplish. I mean, remember Kilat Jeshurun, and when he told the story, a little, you know, little guy, but when he opened his mouth, Pem Mapik Magoliath, there was no one like him as a public speaker. And what he accomplished, the Rav spoke at Ramaz's, 75th anniversary, or maybe 50th anniversary. The Rav spoke and praised him to the sky, that he said his Maimonides is based upon the model of Ramaz, Ad Kedei Kach. Rabbi Young already was more the Lamdan. He was a product of Germany and England and Hungary, and he was more of a Talmud Chacham. You all know he translated for Sansino, the Shas. In addition, so many volumes he edited, so many articles he wrote. He was a interesting tipus type. Really combined within him America, Germany, Hungary, England, and all that went with it. However, this being said, their approaches were very different. And here you come to the heart of the issue that clouded the yeshiva scene for the next 3 years. Why did this suddenly become a topic? Because Herbert S. Joe Lichtenstein, in his old age, has to be in the 70s already, wrote a manuscript, a memoir. Was never completed. He died in 79. I don't believe the manuscript was ever published in totality. But he wrote a manuscript about his role, about KJ, about Ramaz, and about what today is Yeshiva University. At that time was Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. And Joe Lichtenstein played a very important role, not just as a rabbi, but his congregation, KJ, today, Kehillat Jeshurun, created the President of the United States of America. Just think for a minute. Trump was just called the first Jewish president Just call. You check it out. It's all over the internet. Doesn't mean he's Jewish, but take a look who's surrounding him. Take a look at his values. I just showed Yomo, who's at Shvat Ami now. I'm proud of that achievement. I just showed Yomo on the internet. Yomo went crazy. Fred Trump, the president's father, built the shul in Flatbush, in East Flatbush. There's a picture. He gave the land. He's at the dedication. He's speaking. There's a plaque in his honor. Take a look. Who would dream? The president of the United States, there's going to be a kosher kitchen in the White House so his daughter and son-in-law and grandchildren can eat when they come to the White House. I mean, this is... It's a dream. Excuse me?
And three of his closest confidants.
With Shimon Shabbos. Compare this to the Jews around Obama, self-hating Jews who only want to get rid of Israel because we create guilt feeling in them that there's a state of Israel they can't assimilate as readily as the New York Times would want. It's unbelievable what's going on. Joe Lichtenstein Shul. Pardon me for not using titles, but I lived the era, Rabbi Joseph H. Lichtenstein, Little Joe as we called him, he had the most prominent balabatim. The president of Manhattan, Sam Levy, was his balabas. Well, Sam Levy was chairman of the board of what today is YU. Afterwards, who becomes chairman of the board? Max Etra. Who was Max Etra? Joe Lichtenstein's key balabas. Dov, I'll tell you a story, well, in parentheses, give you a treat for coming to class. True story. All my stories are authenticated. Don't have to, there's only one story I make up, and I tell you, that's with the BMT boys with the in the beach any lot, but that's not for now. So Joe Lichtenstein, he was suffering the late 40s. The shul is empty Shabbos. Not like today, there are 800 people, various minyanim. Who davened? Who was from on the east side? The west side always had from Jews. Not a massive, it's not Williamsburg, it's not Wattle Park, but the east side didn't even have a mikvah. What are you talking about? So he decided, he proposed to the board of trustees, look, you know what our problem is? The balcony is two stories up. Let's bring the women downstairs. We'll put a mechitza in the middle. It'll be more family-friendly usage. So the board of trustees said, Rabbi, if you say it's okay with us. Fine. That was Tuesday night. Wednesday morning at Minyan, the president of the shul of YU, Max Etra, goes over to the rabbi, says, Rabbi, I have to tell you, if you go ahead with your plans, I have to leave the synagogue. So... Joe, the rabbi, why? What's the problem? Nope, what's the problem? Max Etra never married. He took care of his widowed mother. He has a schut. She lived to real old age because she had a son that took care of her. In addition, every free moment he did business. He's a wealthy man, Max Etra. He says, Rabbi, I went home last night and told my mother what you want to do. My mother said to me, if that's what the rabbi will do, I cannot daven in such a place. So Baruch Hashem, they went back to the balcony, and I understand now that they rebuilt the synagogue, there's a balcony even higher up. The women are complaining, I heard already, scuttlebutt, they rebuilt it. Why did they have to say that? But I think they have an elevator on Shabbos. Okay, an automatic elevator. But what a story. That's close to parentheses. So Joe Lichtenstein was, his importance was way beyond the other two in the sense that his balabatim were the key players in the greater Yeshiva University layman picture. Now, he writes this memoir, and the chapter on the battle for the presidency after Rabbi Revel is the chapter that Rabbi Lichtenstein released. And I want to fill in this chapter, because Joe Lichtenstein wrote it when the players were alive, And he evidently didn't want to write names not to embarrass anyone. So you'll see the whole chapter is the Jewish center fought this, the rabbi fought this, the Jewish center fought this, the Balabatan fought this, and he never tells you who he's talking about, nor does he go to the depth of the issue. And that's what I want to do right now. My dear students, we're guessing what happened, but here I don't have to guess. Even though I was a kid at the time. It's not that I lived it or played a role in it. The two candidates originally for the presidency were Mori Urebi Rav Soloveitchik, and the other candidate was Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. Goldstein and Lookstein could never be considered candidates for the presidency because they did not have the learning. At that time, it's not like what happened with Richard Joel that they wanted a fundraiser. At that time, the only image that the yeshiva had for president was the president in Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Dr. Dov Revel. Dov Revel was a going on deal with a phonographic memory. He also had the first PhD issued by Dropsy College in scientific Jewish scholarship. He wrote on the Sadducean Karaitic traditions and how it differs from Halacha, Devar Hashem. Dov Revel set the tone. They were looking for someone like Dov Revel. It was obvious they wanted someone who was a Lamdin Mufak, and they wanted someone who had a doctorate. Fine. So Goldstein and Lookstein do not enter into the picture. But Rabbi Dr. Young becomes a prime candidate. Now, he battles the Rav, but the Rav drops out because there's a lot of opposition. The Agudas HaRabbanim has a very bad reputation. RCA does not really exist as a major force. It was first organized in 1935. It doesn't become a major force till after World War II. The Rav is part of Agudas HaRabbanim. The Rav is devoted to Reb Lazer Silva. The Agudas HaRabbanim would like to swallow up the yeshiva. Read my second book, The Silva Era. You'll get all the facts there. In Dolphin's book, he quotes a good deal of the scholarship that we have on what happened after Rabbi Revel died. My own, Gurak, other people have written. So the Rav basically becomes happy, bidiyavad, not that it's his choice, to remain in the classroom, to remain a Rebbe. Members of his family said to me, there was nothing our father wanted more than to be president of Yeshiva and Yeshiva College to succeed Rabbi Revel. But you see, there's Hashgacha Pratet. God willed otherwise. And the Rav, who taught a small class, how many students were there? 20, 25 at the time. It's not like what would happen later, 100 people, 125 people. Dove, in your time, how many were in the room? How many?
About 100.
It's not what would happen later. The Rav remained in the classroom, and from that little classroom, he became the greatest Rav, Rebbe, Rosh Yeshiva of the 20th century, influencing so many lives. But that was Hashgacha Pratet. But still, you need a candidate, you need someone to succeed. And here, there was a young man who had come to America. His life was very, very similar to that of Rabbi Revel. Came to America, running away from Europe, 1928. Could barely speak English, could barely speak Yiddish. The man couldn't speak. If you ever heard Rabbi Belkin speak, he couldn't understand him. Nishki von Grinz of Kosteinem. He was amazing, amazing. Didn't know any English. Rabbi Leventhal picked him up at the yeshiva, couldn't believe what the man knows in Shas and Poiskim. He was an Eloi. Rabbi Revel. Rabbi Belkin, I should say, an Eloi. Winds up in Brown University. Within a few years after his arrival in America, has a PhD, becomes a Rebbe in the yeshiva, mid-30s, and professor of Greek and Latin. unbelievable. He was the most beloved Rebbe in the yeshiva. The students loved him. At Givenvadim, he was warm, he was understanding, he was good, he gave good shayurim. He was clear. The name Nathan Bumin mean anything to you? Rabbi Nachum Bumin, he was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Belkin. Gil Clapham, I mean, that whole era, they loved him. But Rabbi Belkin was a young man with a drive. And when Rabbi Revel died, he became the leading faculty member. He became like the dean of the yeshiva. They needed someone to turn to, someone to make decisions. It was Rabbi Belkin. He was very young. But little by little, he garnered attention. And beginning with 42, when it was apparent that the Rav could not become the Rosh Yeshiva and president, it became a battle between Rabbi Belkin and Rabbi Young. Now, what was this battle about? And leaving out, it's inevitable, we're only human beings. Yeah, I don't have to tell you, it's a famous Tosfos that there's no such thing when you hate a Russia, right? There's no such thing as pure hatred after the first minute. And Tosfos says so beautifully, and all the Balei Musa have developed this, I'm angry at someone, he's a Mechalel Shabbos. 1 minute later, he's angry at me because I'm angry at him. At that moment, I'm angry at him because he's angry at me. The lishma disappears. The shalol lishma takes on. That's the way human beings are. Adam karev etzel atzmo. Person cares about himself. Most people have egos. I know myself what's happened to me in life. When I came in Aliyah, I once spoke out against mixed dancing. There was mixed dancing in the Mamlachti Dati teachers' colleges. It's a different world then. So someone wrote a whole article against me that a famous rabbi of Cayman Aliyah from South Africa, that I'm a troublemaker and I'm a fanatic. I live to have him apologize to me. But you know, people try to get ahead. People, what can I tell you? This is life. I've been purged. People have copied my scholarship. I once fainted. I saw an article. It's my article word by word. And totally, I never said a word. I'm Baruch Hashem. Don't know how to translate that. But that's life. Leaving out all the realities of life, and I don't want to minimize it. We're humans. We're mortals. There's a reason why the Muslim movement came into the world, and a reason why the Muslim movement didn't succeed. But what was the heart of the machlok, at the heart of the contention? And here it is. And let me spell out for you what Rabbi Lukstein does not spell out. And these are the facts. What Rabbi Young and Rabbis Soloveitchik and Belkin represented are two different worlds. Rabbi Soloveitchik and Belkin were Litvashe Talmidei Chachamim. In Litta, all that mattered was Shas and Paiskim. And you learned in depth. And the basic gestalt of the human being was Shas and Paiskim. People like Rabbi Soloveitchik and Belkin, I have to, whenever I say Rabbi Soloveitchik, I have to because it's my Rebbe. I don't want to say just Soloveitchik. People like those two, Gedolei Yisrael, yes, they Americanized. They Westernized. They got PhDs. They spoke English. They wrote in English. Rabbi Belkin's writings were always edited. Rabbi Honig used to edit it for him. The Rav wrote English, you know, it was in a Germanic English. If you know the Rav's English, he wrote, if you know German, in German you can have a sentence of 50 words. The Rav wrote English like he's writing German, because that evidently was the first non-Yiddish or Hebrew language he learned. And he wrote English that way. It has to be edited when you publish the Rav's writings where he wrote and where he speaks orally. Of course you edit. But even what he wrote, you take Ish Halacha, if you notice, I write in my introduction to the Rav, I asked Larry Kaplan permission at times to edit his translation into English because I said you were taken away by the Rav's Germanic style. I want to do it in proper English. He said, fine. And you'll notice there's slight differences. I break up sentences, make it more palatable to someone who grew up in the United States. The Rav and Rabbi Belkin, sure they had PhDs, but that was Yehuda Va'od. It was not the basic gestalt of the individual. And the Rav himself, I quote him word by word, what can I do in America? We have to go to college, we have to go to graduate school. But Shas and Paiskim, that was the start, that was the end. It's a Litvisher approach. The Rav felt very comfortable with Rav Aaron Cutler. Right or wrong? Remember I told you the story with the Shaila of getting the Jews out of Cuba when Castro permitted them to leave on Yom Kippur? Who did he call to ask? Rav Aaron Cutler. The Rav didn't want to paskin on his own to leak and solve Rav Aaron Cutler. All right, Rav Aaron Cutler never went to college. He wanted to go to college. That's why there's no biography of him, because Art Scroll can't leave out the facts that are so well known to the Lakewood crowd from the early 50s, myself included. But Rav Aaron, Nassim Kamenetsky paid a heavy price because he told the story as it was, but Rav Aaron Sofeshla never went to college, didn't join his sister in Moscow University. But the Rav was very much at home with Rav Aaron Cutler. This was the concept of the yeshiva. It's more than that. The yeshiva learning goes a certain way. All of us here grew up in a yeshiva. I started learning Gemara, let's say, in fifth grade in elementary school. No one gave me an introduction, and no one explained to me what the Gemara is about. You jump into the Yam HaTalmud, and you start to swim. Some of us give up, some of us never really master, and some of us become master swimmers all our lives. All right, that's Litva, that's Lithuania. Rabbi Young represented an entirely different world. As a result of the Enlightenment in Germany, rabbinic seminaries began. And these rabbinic seminaries, totally different than a yeshiva. Utilitarian, pragmatic, well organized, not just Talmud, various courses, Talmud, Bible, Jewish history, Jewish philosophy, homiletics. Today there would be courses Jewish psychology, which is a world unto itself. Not only that, the whole approach was different. Scientific. What do we call it in modern Hebrew? Mada HaYahadut. Classic Hebrew, Chachmat Yisrael. Chochmat Yisrael, Wissenschaft das Judentum, scientific Jewish scholarship. Gemara important? Not that important. 2 hours a day, not 8 hours a day. Approach to Gemara? Scientific, organized, introduction, variant readings, proper text. It's a different world. A totally different world. Doesn't mean you're not from. Hildesheimer's rabbinical seminary, the rabbinical seminary in Berlin, was 100% from. The Rav will testify. I'll quote it to you. 100%. The Rav was someone, they were frumer than Litvaken, who could find the head to there, here, they knew how to learn. 100% from. In Germany, every Rebbetzin went with her hair covered. In Lithuania, what are you talking about? Rabbi Belton gave a talk in the 50s, and I remember they shot at him, where are we different than Teir Vedast and Chaim Berlin? And he explained that in Europe, there were differences. Some Rebbetzins covered their hair, some Rebbetzins didn't cover their hair. All right, I make a living out of giving lectures on what happened in Lithuania. It's not a simple question. Why didn't the women open Gemara, Dr. Yehudit? I had rebellion, their wives didn't cover their hair. Absolutely not. No. Doesn't mean they weren't frum, but their entire gestalt, their entire approach was different. Rabbi Young represented the Chochmat Yisrael. Rabbi Doctor. Yeah, his whole gestalt, dignity, make Yiddishkeit accessible, meaningful. Rachmanis, remember? Reverence. Rabbi Young. Oh. Somebody you could, the dignity, you could feel, the ability to reach out, the ability to write popular books on the beauty of motherhood. Tarat Mishpacha, Shabbat. Oh, the Rav and Rabbi Belkin, the Litvisha. You had a lot of trouble introducing the Rav as Rabbi Doctor, never in the yeshiva. The Rav, our Rebbe. Dr. Belkin, why you publicity? Always try Dr. Belkin, academia. Rabbi, Dr. Belkin meets with Einstein. But if you knew the real Rev Shmuel Belkin, very hard to use the title doctor. Would you follow what I'm saying? The gestalt is Litvish. When I graduated Bernard Revel, I got my doctorate, mid-60s. So there was a balabas, Jersey City, I believe. He reached the conclusion the rabbis don't have ethics. He had plenty of money at that time. He loses it in the crash of 69, and he establishes an institute, the Rogozin Institute, at the YU to deal with ethics. Headed up by Professor Tversky, the Tolna Rebbe / Professor Tversky, the Rav's son-in-law, Yitzchak Tversky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And the Rav is going to sit in, and Dr. Belkin is going to sit in, and 10 of us were appointed each to get $1,000, tremendous sum of money, Rabban Lichtenstein, and yours truly among the 10 people who are Rogozin scholars. So I get the topic, Dinu de Malchut de Dinu. Recognize it. I published it. It's been republished. So you have no idea. Of all my scholarships, so many people have asked me, I always give the right to republish, do whatever you want. It's in Rakafet Arani, the Chelik Aleph or Chelik Bet today. It was originally in tradition. So I get Dinu de Malchut de Dinu. And now I'm going in Aliyah, so I really rush to finish. And I'm the first one who finishes the paper. And now copies are sent around. And we all sit together, Rabbi Belkin, the Rav, and your humble servant, I'm shaking, you know, they're going to review my paper, and I couldn't get over it. Here is Rabbi Belkin, Dr. Belkin, totally caught up with yeshiva problems, and suddenly, like a kid again, my paper, and Dinu de Malchut, and the Kesef Mishnah, and the Rambam Sakhe, the Rambam Gzei Laveg, the Rambam Sakhe, he knew it all. I tell you, he knew more than anyone in the room on that topic. I was blown away. That's Reb Shmuel Belkin. That's his gestalt. You don't have Rabbi Dr. Young's sitting there like that. It's two different worlds. A postscript, you should know, I'm the only one that got money. You won't believe your ears. After they all sit and make their comments, I now have to complete the paper. So I go to Professor Tversky and I say, Reb Yitzchak, I'm going in Aliyah. I'll complete the paper in Israel. You know me. If I say I'm going to complete it, I'll make the corrections that you want, add a few sources, but I need the money desperately. Says, look, I'll see what I can do. I'm supposed to get $1,000. I get a check for $750. I complete the paper from Israel, and then I meet Yitzchak here, must be 1970, and he tells me Ragoza lost any penny. No one got a penny out of it. I'm the only one that got something out of it. So I told him, you see, that's a reward for going in Aliyah. Okay, now you can understand what the battle was about. The board of directors were bitterly split. Someone like Joe Lipstein, Herbert Goldstein doesn't play a major role in this. He's sort of on the side. But someone like Rabbi Lipstein, he was an animate of the Rav. He came from a Hasidic background. He came to America a little kid. The Rav was everything to him. This is the yeshiva. This is the way he was raised. This is the way he was trained. He fought tooth and nail for the Rav. If the rabbi fought for the Rav, then of course Sam Levy and the other Balabatim under Lukstein's greater domain and influence fought for the Rav. When they saw they couldn't get the Rav, this is 42, 43, they settled on Rav Shmuel Belkin. Rav Shmuel Belkin, a Lamdin Mufak, a Litvisher, the most popular Rosh Yeshiva, you should know. This is a fact. He tried desperately to continue saying Shir. He didn't want to give up the Shir. He was elected president officially in 43, becomes president in 44, and for 44 through 45, he still gave a Shir in the yeshiva. By 45, they're getting university status, and remember, to give Shir, you need a clear mind, you need time to prepare. He couldn't do it anymore. He had to give it up, and he regretted. He cried, read, in Washington, I cite a letter that Rabbi Belkin wrote to a student where he literally cries that he had to leave the classroom. He said, you moved me to tears when you called me Rebbe, when you began your letter to me, dear Rebbe. I cite it in Washington. It's from Rabbi Belkin's published writings. They fought for Belkin. The Jewish center people, no. They wanted something more Americanized, something more practical, something that could meet the challenge of the Western world and not just be a replica of a Europäische yeshiva from 9 to 3. They looked at Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. He is the man. He has that ability. He has that gestalt. We want him as president. Speaks the king's English. Was she queen yet? No, I don't think so. Am I right? Or was she queen already? Not yet. The king's English. He had lived in London. His father was a big rav in London, ultimately. Meir Tzvi Young, Rabbi Leo Young's father, he speaks the king's English. He has an organized, modern, scientific approach. Underline the word scientific. This is America of 1942, 43. All right? They fought bitterly. And now you can understand the details, how when they saw Rabbi Belkin was going to be elected, they wanted to postpone the election, give it another few months. It's like in America, let's have a revote today. Let's have a recount, a revote. We didn't know what we're getting into. They did everything possible. But I have to say, to their credit, and this was just repeated now in the election, have to say, I'll explain in a second, have to say to their credit that when they saw the cause was lost, the Rabbi Lookstein element supporting Rabbi Belkin pleaded with everyone to make it unanimous. It would be a covet for the yeshiva if everyone agreed to give Dr. Belkin full support and announce to the world he was unanimously elected. The same thing happened with Rabbi Berman. As I mentioned, Irvin Shapiro filled me in, but I knew a little bit about this, that if you recall, they were supposed to make the announcement that Rabbi Dr., my dear student, Ari Berman, would be president. It was a few days earlier than when they finally announced it. And I remember Rabbi Miller was very worried because we have a lot to gain by Rabbi Berman becoming president for the simple reason that he was a graduate of this school. He studied here. It wasn't in this room, as I recall. It was still when we taught on the other side of the building. Part of this building was rebuilt. This is before they restructured the part of the building where the Abraham program is. That's why I believe I taught him, not in this room, I'm pretty certain, because I remember exactly where he sat and I can envision the room. So we had a lot to gain with Rabbi Berman's election, and sadly they're not announcing it. The inside story was that it seems in YU's charter today that to select the president, he needs 80% of the votes of the Board of Governors, the Board of Trustees. Not only that, every member of the Board of Trustees has to be present when a new president is being selected. You cannot be absent. And Rabbi Irvin Shapiro described to me the scene that here are these multi-billionaires sitting in one room. Two-thirds of them were constantly on the phone. You understand the way the world works today? You cannot get away from your business, from your responsibilities. I think people are going to die younger. Ultimately, it has to be researched, because outside of Shabbos, no one but no one can get away. Only a nincompoop like Rakefet refuses to carry a cellular phone, because when I walk, I think, and I always have paper in my pocket, and I put notes down that become drashot, become learning, and who knows what can come out of when you're walking and your mind is working. I don't want to be bonded with Narishkeit, but guys are making billions of dollars. They need their advice on a half-billion-dollar deal that's just come up. So Irwin described the scene to me that two-thirds of the people at any given moment were on their phones dealing, but they had to be there and they had to vote. And the original vote did not hit 80%. They were short, I think, three votes, he told me, because people, whatever reasons, not that they, one person, they were angry at his father for some business. What does that have to do with Ari Berman? They understand. They were angry at Chveis, his uncle, this one, that one. Others still had that vision, we need a fundraiser. We don't want to go back to the rabbi doctor concept. We need a fundraiser. So they worked. Irwin said to me, he said he played the big role. I mean, he's not in the best of health, if you know what I'm saying. But he said he spoke with people, come on, we're going to elect Rabbi Berman. We got to make it unanimous. Cast the vote in his favor. And Baruch Hashem, the votes went in his favor and they made it unanimous. So you see, I don't know if anyone there had the insight to know what you're doing is exactly what happened back in 1943. All right. Let me go one step further, and I'll prove everything I said today next week. I don't want to leave you thinking it's Rakefet's theory. Es nicht im Feld rein, was ich red. I don't know how to say that in English either, but let it stand. You get the feeling, and I will prove to you every syllable is correct. Now, once Rabbi Belkin was elected, then comes the classic story. I'll tell it again. I told it a few years ago. People repeat the story, and I had the schut. I heard it directly from Jacob, from the person involved in the story, Jacob Hotstein. You remember the story? It's unbelievable. I love it. He told it to me at the Plaza Hotel. Anyone recognize the name Jacob Hotstein? It's the Vayakum Dachadash. There were the three Hotstein brothers in the yeshiva. very successful. One went on to become Sam Hartstein. I miss him very much. He was public relations YU. He was fabulous. He built YU into the New York Times already, had to quote YU. It's all due to Sam Hartstein. He had another brother who was in the rabbinate in Manhattan, an Orthodox shul, New York, Manhattan, heart of the world. And the third brother, Jacob Hartstein, was like the dean of the college. Later, he becomes the founder of Kingsborough Community College in Brooklyn, right? It's in Brooklyn, Kingsborough. He was the first president. So Jacob Hartstein told me, when Rabbi Velkin is elected, right afterwards, he becomes president, inaugurated, and right outside the what was called the Beis Medrash at that time, who did they name it after? The Harry Fishel Beis Medrash. Right outside the Harry Fishel Beis Medrash, in the hallway there, right? Room 101, 102, 103, that's where the Rav taught, room 102. Right outside in that hallway, the Rav is talking with Jacob Hartstein, and along comes Rabbi Dr. Shmuel Belkin. Oh, they give mazel tov, and you know, the Rav went back a long way with Shmuel Belkin. Belkin taught for the Rav in his Talmud Torah in Boston when he studied in Brown University in Rhode Island. That's how he supported himself, and many Shabbatot he spent with the Rav and the Rebbetzin in Boston. And they say to Rav Shmuel, mazel tov. No, and they're speaking Yiddish to each other, and in mazel tov, and what are your plans? What's going to be? And Reb Shmuel Belkin tells them, we're going to get university status, and I'm going to establish a medical school, and we're going to be one of the top universities in the United States. Not just the yeshiva, but with a medical school and other graduate schools. And Rabbi Belkin excuses himself. He has to go back to his office, which is up the steps where Rabbi Finkelstein sat years later. That was Rabbi Belkin's office. And when he walks away, the Rav and Jacob Hartstein look at each other and break into laughter. And they say, "Zan narishkeit hamenach nishtum zum ganzen Leben gehet." Such foolishness we never heard in our whole life. And they're laughing. And Rabbi Belkin, university status, medical school. The guy is planting a flag on the moon. Who are we talking? What are we talking? And Jacob Hartstein said to me, take a look what that little man did. Arrived in America, couldn't speak a word of English, never became a public speaker. I told you, even in his native language, Yiddish, you can hear their tapes of him. You got to listen with three ears to try to make out Rav Shmuel Belkin giving you shir on a tape. And take a look, they were laughing, and look what that man accomplished. All right, so to reiterate, let's reiterate what I did. Baruch Hashem, I humbly bow my head to Rav Shmuel Belkin. I had a special relationship with him. Of course, I already was a Talmud in the yeshiva where he was more of a figurehead. He was more removed. He was no longer the Rebbe at a Rosh Yeshiva. He was involved at the building the medical school, raising the funds. And Min HaShemayim Zikuni, if you ask me, I can tell you next week, it's beyond my control how I wound up having a warm relationship with Rav Shmuel Belkin. And I feel bad that he's never gotten the credit he deserves. I've pleaded with the big shots in YU, Gil Klapperman, who's not well today, on in years, Rabbi Dr. Gil Klapperman, his doctorate was on Yeshiva, 1886-1915. A guy named Donnie Rothkopf did a doctorate 1915 to 1940, Rabbi Revel. Why don't we have a doctorate or Rav Shmuel Belkin? And I can't get anywhere. Someone wrote to me, well, they were afraid to write about him. He got divorced later, and he liquor and cigarette. I said, with one paragraph, you could take care of that. We don't have to leave out what's not complimentary, but you have to write it in a nice way that the burden of the yeshiva by the 1960s destroyed the man physically. It's true. He was so taken up with raising money, he wound up smoking, and he wound up, it was always, when he appointed me Rosh Yeshiva, he broke out a bottle and would drink the L'chaim like a Chassidic Rebbe. I drank a L'chaim with Rabbi Belkin, and I mean, you can say it in a nice way. Yes, he remarried, it's true, and he remarried a woman who was a reporter for Long Island newspaper, very sophisticated, and she was not from, and she studied, and you should know, she became totally from a Shomer. She outlived him by almost 40 years. She just died 2 years ago, Abby Belkin, and she was Shomeret Shabbat all her life because of that relationship with Rav Shmuel Belkin. So that you can do, but that's not the thrust of his life. The thrust of his life is where he came from, what he went through. His father was executed before his eyes. Someone opened the door and said, "Are you Belkin?" and killed him with a shot him in front of this kid. I mean, what he went through, the poverty. He shared the shoes with Rabbi Rum. They roomed together in Radnach. I mean, the stories are unbelievable. They shared one coat. One day, one guy walked out. The other guy, in the winters in Russia, they would learn together. And if they walked out, it was every other day they would walk out. I mean, it's overwhelming. And what he built, please, if someone is listening, do a doctorate on Reb Shmuel Belkin. So we spoke about what the Machlokes was about, who the players were. I told an absolute honest picture. Rabbi Lookstein, and I think the reason he didn't want to reveal all the names, Rabbi Joe Lookstein, I think the reason is very simple. He was writing at a time that Rabbi Young was alive and well, and they were still, you know, the east side, the west side. He didn't want to create Machloket, but this is the heart of what this chapter is about. You can find it online. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, I will prove to you that every word I said is correct. Now, coming announcements. First of all, Dov, Elaine Zakai, mean anything to you?
Nope.
Elaine.
No.
Elaine. My wife, Arifei, that's some Freudian slip. My wife had a classmate in Hunter College, Elaine Zakheim.
Not related.
Okay. Okay. Maybe you know her by her Hebrew name afterwards.
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Number one, next week we pick up here exactly where we left off, and once we finish this sideshow, we go into Rav Yitzchak Kotner. And I hope that we can drag up some Talmidim Rabbi Yitzchak Kotner, because there's something I'm going to say that's very interesting, innovative, and I want to know how a Talmud of Rav Kotner reacts to what I'm going to say, but that's come much later. When we finish Rabbi Kotner, it won't be 2.5 years, it'll be a few weeks, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will sail into the history of the rabbinate in America, the Orthodox rabbinate, and that will take, I would imagine, a good 2 years. It's quite a topic. The Sunday class, I'm in the middle now of Russian Jewry. We're going to, you should get good news, everything should be Bahatzlacha. If I see, I might yet see you, we'll talk Thursday about Friday night. Okay. We're sailing in there. I mean, I cannot tell you how interesting yesterday's shiur was, and we're left with the question, he's dealing with Rav Ruderman, Rav Menashe Klein, Rav Ruderman, can you put tefillin on these Russian Jews in Baltimore? Well, we'll deal with that, and then we're going to go into a question that no one else has ever gotten to the best of my knowledge, and it's overwhelming. Are we obligated to stop everything else we're doing and work to save our brethren in Russia? Question circa 1985, 1986. It's a world of material there. So we're rolling. We're doing what we're doing. Now, freebies.
Are you doing the freebie as a rabbi in the United States?
Yeah.
Are you going to include Rabbi Leo Young?
Well, of course.
I mentioned that first to the two.
No. They played.
Leave the scientific thing apart. He was the only one.
Right.
In the 40s and the 50s.
Who reached out in England.
Right. Clear what is Shaman.
Right.
What is Mikveh? What is Yehagut? The whole idea
that Forbes
came into. That we Orthodox Jews are never ethical.
Right.
He had the whole thing about
righteousness. Right.
And he wrote about the lesser.
Judaism is perfect. Jews are not. Yeah. Of course we're going to get him up with RCA. Of course we're going to deal with him as well. But what you just said, you're quoting what I said in Shir a half hour ago. You follow? I don't want to take away from Rabbi Young, but those Balabatim wanted for America. We don't need a Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva.
It shows you something else about Rabbi Dolphin, because Leo Young was invited to teach a class
right.
at the school, at college.
Right.
And instead of sloughing him off,
right. no,
he
no.
was introduced into the school.
Right.
And he gave, oh, so it's true.
Money.
His method of teaching was, he was like talking to a stenographer.
Right.
He repeated everything.
Right. He had notes in front of him. Right. No, but you got to remember, Rabbi Belkin, Leo Young was the West Side Jewish Center. A lot of money came into the yeshiva from there, Gottesman's money, you follow? He was a major player, but Rabbi Belkin was smart. He had Young teaching, Lukstein teaching, Goldstein teaching. It was very good. So you had the leading rabbis a part of the scene. The Balabatim followed the rabbis. Well, Baruch Hashem. Anyway, I mentioned yesterday that my Shirim and Shlomo Kabach drew a lot of fire. So I said as well, my article in Meir Kahana this time, not like the letter, I drew three terrible letters cursing the Jewish Action for publishing my... They're mad at Jewish Action, mad at Meir Kahana, and mad at Rakefet. So a number of people asked this. I told you, I responded. You'll see in the next issue, I wrote a small response. No. I don't have time to get involved in Irishkeit. I mean, no one has to be a... I write the Palgin and Dibura that I'm smart enough to have my own opinions, but Meir had a big influence on me as making me into a Zionist, B'nai Akiva, my Madrid, etc. I spoke about it yesterday. So people asked me for copies of my article. I Xerox. This is... copies, whoever wants, of the article that appeared in the latest Jewish Action. Now, these are freebies. Israel has a baseball team. The in-law, this is the New York Times, describing Trump's inner circle, Jared Kushner's steadying hand, where they think Kushner's a Mahalo Shabbos because he came to see Trump on Shabbos. Someone ought to do me a favor. Got to get hold of the New York Times and bring them to a class in Shabbos and understand if a man goes to see his father and walks and goes ich up 55 flights with a guy pressing the button for him, min kann sich gut ausklären ahead the friend. But that's the New York Times. They don't know what Shabbos is about. Here's an article on the Rebbe and how the Rebbe held Crown Heights as a Jewish neighborhood. Beautiful article. Here's an unbelievable article. I have two copies. Very interesting. The daughter of the Nazi who killed the Rebbe's brother in World War II comes to plead forgiveness from Chabad Chassidim. Very interesting article, which leads to the old question mark, can we ever forgive them? And it shows we have to. Here's a very interesting article. This girl, her mother is Israelis, her husband is Catholic, no interest in religion. Her two boys, one suddenly develops an interest, one couldn't care less. You got to read it to believe it. But she's involved with Chabad, and she takes the Rebbetzin gave birth, and she takes the three other children to the park, and she couldn't get over the way the children care for one another. Beautiful article. Maybe it's opening up to her what Torah is about. Here's Chabad, Quantity and Quality, an interview with Rabbi Rafal Aaron, a counselor and therapist. the director of the Gateway Family Counseling Center in Melbourne, Australia. And he talks about the Rebbe, the advice the Rebbe gave him. Here's an unbelievable achievement, Yitzchak. The Mishnah translation into Russian and commentary has now been completed. This is the celebration, the Siyum. Who paid for it? George Roa. How do you find such good people? And here is 1,200 college students spent Shabbat in Crown Heights. And here is the Havdalah ceremony. Havdalah leads to proud Jewish party. All right, I have to stand in awe of Chabad. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya.